Hello!
Hey guys, it's Arden Cho.
Hey, I'm Holland Roden.
Hello, this is Ian Bowen.
Hey you guys, this is Melissa Poncio.
Hi, I'm Lyndon Ashby.
Hi, I'm Dylan Sprayberry.
This is Megan Tandy.
This is Tyler Posey, and you are listening to Not Another.
Not Another.
Not Another.
This is Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast.
Yes, it is!
Oh.
Woo!
Hey, this is Jeff Davis. You're listening to Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast, my favorite podcast in the world.
On my way now, don't give up on me, and no one knows what tomorrow brings. These weary eyes will never rest until they look in yours again. I'm on my way now, I still believe.
Hello everyone, welcome to Not Another Teen Wolf podcast. This week we are recapping Teen Wolf Season 5 Episode 16, Liability, which is the carrying on episode from last week, two-parter episode of Break and Lydia out of Icon House. So this is sort of the conclusion to all of that drama happening the same night, and yeah, we are ready to go ahead and talk about it. If you're tuning in to Not Another Teen Wolf podcast for the first time, though why you would be on this particular episode, I can't imagine. I am Natalie, one of your hosts, and my co-host is Karen, who is our lead writer for Teen Wolf on our parent website of Hyperbole. Hello, Karen.
Hi.
How are you?
I'm good. How are you?
I'm good. All good. Are you ready to talk about Liability?
Yes, I have a lot of feelings about this episode. I didn't like it as much as the previous one, but it gave me a lot more feelings.
Interesting. I'm curious to see where your feelings are and what they're about. So, yeah, if you want to get in touch with us with your feelings, you can reach us on Twitter, which is NATW Podcast, on our email address, which is natwpodcast@gmail.com. You can follow us on our Tumblr, which is notanotherteenwolfpodcast.tumblr.com, or you can follow us on Instagram, which is natwpodcast. Karen, would you like to tell everyone the good news about Instagram?
I would, because this is so exciting. It now supports multiple accounts, which means that it's just as easy to switch between accounts as it is on Twitter, which means we're probably going to be a little less lazy about posting things to Instagram.
Yeah, because if we can just flick between and be like, oh, that's relevant, post it, if you know what I mean, even if it's just a ridiculous selfie in a Teen Wolf t-shirt, or if it's anything we ever see that reminds us of Teen Wolf, or even at cons, you know, it's very difficult to like log out of Instagram and like log back in. It's really annoying. So yeah, hopefully we'll be seeing a bit more of that. You can follow us over there again, NATW Podcast. I could even probably dig up some old photos that we haven't posted from some of our olden times, set visits and conventions and stuff like that, and maybe build up a few more photos there now that I can just easily flick on my phone and do it. So
yeah, I was wondering fun. If we had any old ones that we could post.
Like millions. So many,
really?
Karen. Yeah, so many. So much set visit stuff now that it's all like out, if you know what I mean, like an out now that we've passed the period, and like lots and lots of pictures from cons, like of the guests or just of like cosplays and like all sorts, so, or even just pictures of us hanging out. So yeah cool. If you're interested in Instagram, you can go and hang out with us over there anyway. So jumping right in to this week's favorite quotes, mine, I had two, which are a bit of a flip side to each other. One of them was on the funny side, which was when Liam and Scott end up finding Parrish, and they say, you know, he's kind of, how did you find me? And Liam just says, we just followed the burning smell. Because Liam, this episode, I have a lot of thoughts about Liam this episode, actually, but he was hilarious, and he's a great little tiny dude, and I found that hilarious. Some of the humor, his humor and Mason's humor in this episode was really, really good. On the flip side, mine was, my actual favorite quote was Styles, when he's confronting Theo about, you know, being a terrible human, which he is, and about the death of his sister, he kind of calls that out. He's like, why would we trust you? We know what you did. And Theo has this big excuse about that he didn't know what he was doing. And Styles says, he was like, I think you pushed her and I think you liked it. And it's just really confronting and really blunt, and I don't know, I really liked it. I also felt really weird about Styles and Theo in this episode. I didn't know why Theo was so desperate to follow Styles around, but they had a weird chemistry going on in this episode that I found interesting. But yeah, I kind of liked Styles just throwing that at him. And what was yours?
I love the fact that Styles just is not afraid of Theo.
Yeah,
like,
no,
Theo is like, pretty scary, but he's not buying it.
It's kind of like in the same way that I refuse to call Kylo Ren Kylo Ren, because this is like really, this is a tangent that is actually relevant. I think that Kylo Ren is absolutely pathetic. Like, I understand that he is powerful and scary and has done a lot of bad things, and I don't think he's pathetic like, oh, Lucasfilm, you created a pathetic character. I think he's meant to be pathetic. I think he is a complete and utter loser, ungrateful moron, basically totally deluded. And I refuse to call him Kylo Ren. I always call him Ben in my head. I only ever call him Ben. And it's because I refuse to play into his antics of calling himself Kylo Ren. And I kind of feel the same way about Styles and Theo, if you know what I mean. Like, that he's just like, no, Theo, I refuse to act like you have power, if you know what I mean. And I'm, yeah, kind of into that. So I really like the way that he just is like, shut up, go away, fuck you, basically, at all times. So, yeah.
Cool. Well, my quote's kind of like right down the middle. It's a little funny. It's a little serious. It's when Styles tells Lydia, please shut up and let me save your life, because, oh, it was such a good moment. And Lydia was like, no, you have to leave. You have to leave. And he says that and she's just like, okay, you can save my life now. And like the music swelled and it was just
breathless. And it was just, yeah, I mean, There's some things to be said about Styles and Lydia in this episode, so...
Yeah. We will definitely get to that. But first, let's just get this out of the way, because it happened at the beginning of the episode. I feel like we should talk about it, even though I know you really don't want to. But Liam and Hayden's makeout session, more or less awkward than the kiss between Kate and young Derek.
Oh my god, what a comparison.
Because that made us cringe too.
That was really bad. The Kate and young Derek was really excruciatingly bad. I will admit that. It was really horrible. And I don't think we've ever addressed enough just how creepy and weird the Kate and Derek situation was, because there's a whole load to unpack there that could be its whole other trauma. But Liam and Hayden are just two teenagers, you know, apparently having sex, and it was unnecessarily graphic and really weird, and it felt more creepy than when Scott and Allison were kind of like doing things in like season one. I feel like this is the most graphic sex scene we've ever had on the show. And I did not like it. So that's all I have to say about that.
I didn't either.
I also know this, isn't Sprayberry still only like 12, like in real life? So I felt weird about that.
He's not 12.
Is he 18 yet?
I don't think so.
I will look that up, because I don't know. They felt really young to me to have that much graphicness in there. He's 17.
I will say this about it. I have always applauded Teen Wolf for being very pro sex. Like, it's always been a really strong element of the show, and we've seen it in Lydia's character, and I really like that they don't make it this taboo thing.
Yeah.
However, I don't really know what it was about it, but this was really awkward for me too. I really like Liam and Hayden together, but for some reason, it didn't work. Maybe because it felt a little gratuitous. It wasn't necessarily like part of, I don't want to say the plot, because the sex scenes, you know, don't generally have anything to do with the plot. But with Scott and Allison, it felt more like, we shouldn't be doing this. Oh my gosh, we're almost going to get caught. And, you know, he has to sneak out a window and it's a whole thing, compared to this where it just felt like, I don't know.
It just
we had time to kill. We're just going to throw this in here.
It dragged on, and I'm just like, oh, they're really, like, okay. Like, you could have, like, done this, like, in a quarter of the time and just, like, oh, she's remembering their togetherness. Okay, I get it. It's, like, really, I don't know. They felt really young, and I felt really awkward, and it was really gratuitous. And I understand that many things about this show are gratuitous, but this was really gratuitous in a way that I rarely pull them up on, if you know what I mean. And I was just like, oh my god, okay, I'm watching this on a public bus, all right, which I was this afternoon. So, I don't know. I get it. I get what was happening. Hayden remembered that she loves Liam and the end.
Right. Which,
why couldn't they have shown him, like, giggling in an ice cream parlor? When is anyone on this show ever going to eat ice cream? It's all I want.
Never. They're all lactose intolerant. Okay, so I do want to get into, like, why this potentially was important. Not just, like, their relationship, but Hayden in general, because it felt very strange in this episode that she was so prominent when she didn't necessarily have to be. I feel like this is going to come up again later, because we keep returning to the fact that she doesn't really believe in what Theo's doing. She's kind of on the fence. She doesn't necessarily want to go to Scott's side because she believes Theo can keep them safe. But at the same time, she loves Liam and she wants to believe that what he's doing is the right thing, and therefore what Scott's doing is the right thing.
Yeah.
And in this episode, she says, when it comes to Liam, I'm a liability. And then Deucalion responds, you want to help Liam? Worry less about being a liability and more about your ability to lie. And of course, this is a riff on the title. Mm. And so I feel like it should be important.
Well, I'm confused by that whole thing, because it's like she knows I have to stay behind because when it comes to Liam, I'm a liability. Does that mean she's staying behind on purpose so that Liam won't, like, risk himself protecting her? Why would Theo make her stay back as a liability to Liam? I don't understand. Is it because Theo's trying to do the right thing by Liam, or, like, what is that situation? I don't understand.
No, I think that Theo wants her to stay behind because he can't necessarily trust her if something goes sideways and Liam ends up.
She's a liability to Theo because Liam exists, basically.
Yes.
Right. Yeah, I was kind of, the phrasing of that was not perfect. So, yeah, all right, I understand. So, like, if they have to go up in a fight and Liam's involved, Hayden is not the one to be in the fight because she will not be trusted.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And I just wonder if this is going to come back later.
Yeah, I'm presuming this is like a setup, but I don't know. I don't even know what Deucalion's still doing there. Like, what do they want him for now that he's there?
I mean,
it's just they don't know what
information.
They've got him and they don't know what to do with him now, because if they set him free, he'll, like, you know, take them out.
Maybe. I mean, he definitely wants Scott, and Theo believes that he can help him defeat the beast, so I guess he's just waiting there until he's significant.
Oh, poor Deucalion, you're irrelevant. All right. Yeah, I don't know. It was quite strange to me. But yeah, Hayden looks so angry all the time.
Yeah, I especially noticed that in the scenes with Mason, because he was, like, he's very natural and very, like, oh my god, and, yeah, you know, not overdramatic, but, like, he's definitely a little dramatic. And she's just like, yeah, okay, we need to get shit done. And it was just, I don't know, it was good. I like her, though. I like her a lot.
Okay, so aside from that, now we can move on from that. Oh, and the hashtag. The hashtag.
I didn't notice what it was.
During the sex scene.
Okay.
I don't even want to say it. I'm going to type it to you, and then you're going to be like, I want you to react as you read it. For real.
Puppy, stop. Are you serious?
For real.
Oh, my God.
I know. Oh, it made it 20,000 times worse. Yeah. Too far, okay. MTV. Too far, can I just say?
That's okay. Let's move on. I can't. Like, it was bad enough, but now it's worse. Let's just go.
All right, yeah. Scott and Liam realize that someone in Icon House can help them, which is Meredith. And so we have a definitive answer. Meredith is a patient in Icon House, catatonic in a room, and her spirit is wandering around, you know, helping Lydia, which is kind of what we ended up coming up with during the course of this season. But I was still really confused, like, until we got this confirmation. I'd have to go back and watch the Benefactor episodes to work out exactly how they got away with all of that, if you know what I mean, because I really thought that she was dead and it was only her spirit still existed. So even as the Benefactor, even when they discovered that she was the Benefactor, I thought she was dead. So, I don't know, I clearly missed something massive there. But they find her and she's really out of it. Like, she's really not with it. She's, you know, ill and basically catatonic in the ward in her room. And Scott tries to get through to her and he's really, you know, lovely and gentle with her and stuff like that. And it really seems like she's not understanding anything, like she's not in there. And then just as they're about to give up, he sort of reaches out and grabs his hand and pulls it to her neck to do the mind reading neck puncture situation. Whatever it is they do, memory. It's like a pen sieve, like a stabby pen sieve where you go into someone's memory. So Scott does that on her basically. And I didn't quite, you know, he goes in and basically just talks to her inside her head. Like, it's not really her viewing, it's not really him viewing a memory as such, as far as I could tell. It was more him walking around with her in her kind of astral plane. So how did you kind of feel about that and Scott doing that, I guess, and what it meant?
Well, first of all, I absolutely loved this scene because Scott was so kind to her and so gentle, and like, he was rubbing her hand when he was trying to get her attention, and then he goes to walk away and like, he's disappointed, but he's not mad at her. Like, he doesn't start yelling at her or anything to wake up. And she just like holds on to his hand and brings him back, and he's like, but I could really hurt you. And she, you know, kind of keeps moving his hand toward her neck to say like, it doesn't matter, you need to save Lydia. And he does it, and clearly, like, it is painful for her, and it does take a lot out of her. But the fact that she was willing to sacrifice that for Lydia, and the fact that Scott was so concerned for her, considering, you know, everything that they had been through together, and the fact that, like, he doesn't really know her that well, I don't know. It was just, like, that's the kind of person Scott is, and I loved seeing it.
Yeah, it was really nice, and it was kind of a new take on what this whole stabby neck situation can do as well. And, you know, the difference between, like, doing something forcefully, probably the damage caused as well is, like, a lot less when you're doing something consensually than forcefully. Like, surprise, who would have thought that? But, like, you know, if Scott can utilize this, you know, when he, you know, with people who actually are willing for him to do it, you know, it could be an interesting tool, basically.
Yeah.
Liam fights off the guards while Scott is doing this, and he's very proud of himself because he manages to, like, take these guys out. He really hulks out a few times, Liam, in this episode. Later on, too, like, when he breaks through that gate and everyone kind of looks at him like, what? I'm actually wondering, is Liam, like, meant to be, like, because they've talked early on, they're like, you know, you're going to be able to channel this stuff and be really strong. Is Liam meant to be, like, really, really, really physically strong for a werewolf? Not just, like, it, you know, because he's a werewolf, but, like, but you know how, like, everyone has, like, a specialty skill or something? Like, is he,
right,
you know, Derek's is apparently, like, being super nerdy or whatever. Is Liam meant to be really, 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 really strong, more than your average werewolf? Because he keeps doing things that people seem to find surprising, like feats of strength that are quite surprising.
Yeah, I think that we've basically known this since Derek mentioned it way back when. And I mean, I think that he still needs to learn to control it, but that's also the difference between him having Scott punch him in the face so he can get angry to do it, and then him being able to take down those guards and open that fence without any provocation. Yeah. So I think maybe he's learning to channel it and control it, and it's really cool to see. I really liked this part too, not only because Sprayberry was hilarious, he's so good at the comedy aspect of this, but the fact that Liam was, like, super proud of himself, and he was like, okay, well, my alpha's busy, what am I gonna do? And you can see him hesitate, like, oh God, somebody tell me what to do, and he's just like, all right, well, I'll just figure it out as I go, and it works, and I guess, like, seeing his confidence building in this scene was just really satisfying.
Yeah, it's just interesting and kind of funny that the big... Like, the kind of the, he's, if he's the muscle of the pack, you know, if he's the one everyone relies on to be the muscle, and he's so tiny, but yeah, it's just funny. Anyway, yeah, so he took out all the guards, and then while Scott's in Meredith's mind, he learns that Valak is, you know, what Valak is doing, that he thinks Valak can, Lydia can find out who the beast is through her, you know, banshee process, like through opening up the hole in her head and basically all of the voices and everything, you know, getting to the point of killing her. And but within that process, apparently she'll be able to, like, see all of the answers of the universe, including, like, who the beast is, like, that he can answer the question, she can answer the question. So, you know, it's pretty obvious at this point Valak is, he has good guy intentions in that he wants to stop the beast, but he, you know, is sort of sociopathic about how he solves those problems.
Yeah, he's willing to sacrifice a lot of people to end the problem.
For the sort of and, quote-unquote greater good, like...
Right, and that doesn't necessarily make him, like, evil, but it doesn't exactly make him your best friend either.
Yeah, agreed. And, yeah, he kind of is more harsh and terrible than we... you know, or I had hoped in this episode in kind of the ruthlessness that, you know, he's willing to go to. I did like when he drilled Theo in the leg, but that was good. That was a crowning moment. But it was in order for him to grab Lydia and be like, I'm not done with you yet, which was unpleasant. So, you know, swings and roundabouts. So, yeah, that was rather nasty. And Scott, you know, gets confirmed by Meredith that he can't find her because of the mountain ash lining of Eichenhaus, but that someone else can. And, you know, she says the Hellhound, like Parrish, that they are connected, that he'll always be able to find her because they're connected. So how? Is it just because they're both, like, omens of death? They sort of come from the same spiritual place? Or, like, what on earth is that?
That was my assumption, too. I don't know if there's more to it, but I really like this idea that they're, like, meant to be together. I don't mean that in a shipping sort of way. I mean that in their supernatural identities go hand in hand, because when Lydia screams, and obviously we'll get to this scene more in depth later, when Lydia screams, he can stop it and he can survive that. Mm. And the fact that they kind of, like, coexist to work together to protect the supernatural is just a really cool idea.
It's like Rogue and Wolverine. Like, he's one of the only people that can touch her. And they have that bond, you know. I ship Rogue and Wolverine, FYI, but lots of people don't. But yeah, he's one of the only people that can touch her. And they have a bond, and, you know, it's all... Yeah, so that's nice. But anyway...
Yeah. Well, before we get to that scene, first we have to actually find Lydia. And the way that a couple of people do that is that Theo teams up with Styles. Styles is not happy about it, but it's really the only thing that they can do. And so they head down to the tunnels underneath Eichenhaus to try to find her. Theo's having some trouble. Whatever, that's not important. What is important is what we find out. because he says the Dread Doctors convinced him that his sister wanted him to have her heart, and that he says he didn't really know what was happening. He was only 9 years old. He just kind of, like, believes it. But Styles kind of calls him on it, and he's like, really? You expect me to believe that? And I just don't know why anybody would believe anything that comes out of his mouth anymore.
I don't know. I mean, you know, I'd want to believe that any 9-year-old child was actually relatively innocent, but we have seen that flashback, and if that flashback's meant to be objectively true, you know that he was a freaking psychopath.
And he looked not happy when that was going down, but very, like,
placid.
Yeah, like he just had no emotion, no sympathy for her. And I'm sorry, but if you're 9 and you're watching your sister die in front of you, you know something's wrong.
He wasn't like,
I mean, unless he's really that devoid of any emotion, he should have been aware of what was actually happening.
I don't know. It's very, very questionable, I don't know if we're gonna ever find out more about that. Presumably we will, as they've sort of brought it up again, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, and I'm wondering if, like, we get to the point where Theo is the one to take the Beast's power, or is attempting to take the Beast's power, like, when he gains more power in order to do that, whether it's through the claws or whatever. I just wonder if, like, everything's going to come out to light and he's not going to have to lie anymore, and he's just going to be like, yeah, I totally killed my sister and I didn't care about it.
I mean, but, possibly.
Yeah. But the other thing he says is that, yes, he wants to help find Lydia because he wants to track down the Hellhound because he needs Parrish to kill the Beast. But my question is why. He says, like, he wants the Beast's power, and then he wants to snap the Beast's neck. And he says, maybe I'm not the good guy in your eyes, but I might end up being the guy that saves all your asses, which I totally do not believe, by the way. But it's interesting that he's so hell-bent on stopping the Beast. He wants to be the one to do it. Maybe it gains him power. Maybe he really just does want the Beast dead. But if the latter is the case, what reason to piss off the Dread Doctors because they went back on their bargain to get him a real pack?
Do you think Theo knows who the Beast is?
No.
I'm saying if he does, and it is one of the theories that is we're going to mention later, then I could kind of understand, you know, it in a personal way, like that he might want to, like, you know, get rid of some evidence. But
I think if he knew who the Beast was, he would go up to them when they're not the Beast and kill them.
Yeah, that's probably true. Ben is glory. Anyway, sorry. That's probably true. But I don't know. He was just very desperate in this, like, very desperate to let Styles include him and, like, all of that kind of stuff.
I think he's just still playing the game. He just can't stop at this point.
He just can't stop, what, like, being a sociopath and, like, trying to seek approval and stuff.
Yeah, basically.
Wow, what a
And weird. Lying to manipulate people to his own gain.
What a fun way to live. Valak is kind of, he's with Lydia after he's kind of had his fight with Theo's pack. You know, Theo just let his pack get, like, grievously injured and, like, left them behind. So I don't know why they listen to him. But, like, I really don't know why they, like, do what he says.
Me neither.
Does he have mental control over them? Because I don't know why they do what he says at all. When they're like,
I don't think so, but if you look back on what Hayden has said, I think there's this whole, like, well, he saved our lives, he brought us back to life kind of thing, and they feel loyalty. And I think Hayden, at least, is strong enough to resist that temptation to a certain degree, and so she's not as easily intimidated. But the others, I definitely think, are intimidated, except for Tracy. I think Tracy's just crazy.
Tracy loves
at this point.
It. Tracy is.
Oh my God.
Freaking loves it. And she wasn't like that before she died. I don't know if it's because she became a Canima specifically, but she relishes it. The boys don't, but she really does.
Mm-hmm.
She's living her best life, and it's a bit terrifying. But anyway, Valak, he has Lydia basically down in his weird lab, and he is he's increasing basically a frequency of a stereo in order to get Lydia to concentrate on a particular sound. What strikes me as really bizarre about this entire scene is how he acts like Lydia's, like, in on it with him, if you know what I mean? And she kind of is as well. She kind of, he's like, you have to do this, and she's like, I'm trying. Like, I don't know if it's just because she has no other option but to go along with it, you know, in whatever way she can. But, you know, he's not, he kind of admits that it might kill her. But, and he's kind of also crazy when he, you know, they see Nurse Cross, you know, she wasn't strong enough for the mask, and Lydia should be, and, you know, he has his little weird breakdown about hating the doctors because they ruined him and made his credibility terrible, so I don't know what he was trying to prove there. But he treats Lydia in a way that, like, I wouldn't say it was, like, treating her well, but he treats her in a way where he's, like, explaining every step to her and trying to get her to, like, participate. Like, not, I mean, there's only so much you can force someone to do when it's up to their own brain, you know? You can't force someone to use their brain in a way that you want them to, but I don't know, did you get this at all? Like, the way that he talked to her during this scene and the way that he was kind of acting like that they'd both agreed to it?
Yes, absolutely. This is one of the things that I wanted to bring up, too, because, like you said, he's not treating her well, but he's not necessarily, like, forcing her
torturing
to do anything.
Her or something. Yeah, he is kind of torturing her, but he's acting like she's in on it, and she is kind of participating.
Right.
Like.
And that's the thing. He's appealing to the logical side of her, and I think he knows that with Lydia, somebody as smart as Lydia, if she can see the logic in it, she's going to do it. And the thing is, Lydia is being very self-sacrificing in this episode. Mm. She is willing to die in order to save her friends. Mm. She has no problem with that whatsoever. And so her brain's about to explode, and she knows they need to find out who the beast is in order to take it down. So she's like, okay, so I die, you guys know who the beast is, and I save all my friends. Where's the problem in that? So I think in a way she kind of is going along with it.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't blame her for it either.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not saying like, oh, she's weak for going along with it or anything. It's just the dynamic of them doing that was interesting to me. It's kind of like she knew that she couldn't get out of it. And then that was kind of it, basically. And I was really, you know, she was kind of like, well, if this is how I die, you know, better make the most of it.
Right. And he respects her a lot, and he respects her power a lot. Of course, you know, he still drilled a hole in her head, so he's not a good guy, but it's this really weird, fine dynamic between him really respecting who she is as a banshee and also just needing to force her to do what needs to be done in order to find out who the beast is.
And he's kind of instructing her to slow her brain because there's too much activity, which is a bit weird because I thought he wanted so much activity that she exploded. Is that not what we were aiming for?
Yeah, I mean, he amplified her power by drilling the hole in her head. This is exactly what he wanted to happen, but my theory is that he needed the extra power, but he also needs the extra power to be focused. It's just strange that he talks about having to slow her brain waves down.
Yeah. You know, he seemed to need a particularly specific focus to happen, you know, so rather than just letting everything be overwhelmed. Like, he needed it to be neater than just everything being overwhelmed.
Yeah. This next scene wasn't a huge one, but I really enjoyed it. Josh seeks out Malia in order to, well, Malia and Kira, in order to help out Corey, who was burned really badly at the beginning of the episode by Parrish. And Kira's been having trouble for a while, but this episode in particular, where she's overwhelmed by the electricity in her body, both from sucking up the power in the last episode and just from Eichenhaus in general, because obviously we saw this happen to her before. And they do a trade. They work together. Josh will suck up Kira's electricity if Malia sucks up Corey's pain in order to help him heal. And I feel like this was just a really cool scene because they're working together. They're not fighting. They don't trust each other, Malia and Josh, but they're willing to both go in and help the other person's friend for the sake of their own friend. And I feel like this is going to be bad news for Theo. Like, maybe there's a little sympathy going on between the Chimeras and Scott's pack now.
Yeah, I mean, and they could all match up pretty nicely if everyone... You know, if they get everyone except weird Tracy, I feel like Tracy is like the Bellatrix to Theo's Voldemort. But if everyone else switches sides, I think that there was some really, you know, you could pair everyone up pretty nicely. Like, you've got Scott and Kira, Malia and Josh, who I think had really interesting chemistry when they were screaming at each other. Mm-hmm. Corey and Mason, Liam and Hayden, obviously, and then Styles and Lydia. So you could have a whole rank of power couples if they all switch sides, so we'll see.
Oh my god, that reminds me of Voldemort and Bellatrix from Starkid, and like...
horrible. Sexy.
Yeah, it's so bad. But anyway, yeah, I thought it was really cool, and I don't know if we're going to see the Chimeras, like, continue on to Season 6, if this is a thing, if Scott's going to gain more members of his pack, but I would be less surprised at that notion than I was even last week. I feel like this was kind of a pivotal scene.
Of the burning and the healing, that kind of truce situation.
Yeah, just working together.
Yeah, I think that it could be the start of something beautiful.
It could be. And I just really like, too, that, like, Kira's weakness is Josh's strength. Like, she has too much electricity, and he needs it to get stronger. And kind of like with Lydia and Parrish, they work really well together. It's like they were just meant to be supernatural creatures, like, paired up in that they just make a really good duo, like a fighting team or something. So I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, no, there are some really well-matched skills there. So I think that, yeah, if they can get both of the boys to switch back sides, to switch their sides back, which I think is potential, it could be, yeah, could be good. Could be interesting. Or do you think that, you know, any of those Chimeras are going to die, like that they shouldn't really be alive, and that, like, once Theo goes or whatever, that they're going to rightfully die?
No, I don't think it really works that way, because it was more like science rather than magic. So it's not like, you know, he cast a spell and once he dies all his spells are reversed or something like that.
I don't necessarily mean, oh, his spells will be reversed, just sort of the balance of the universe, you know.
Could, I mean, I'd be really sad because I love Hayden, but I don't know, I kind of also see it as like just a second chance.
That's fair enough. So Scott and Liam, they go through the Eichenhaus and they find Parrish, you know, because he took a, you know, a metal rod through the trest earlier in the episode, which he apparently yeah. ended up, you know, pulling out and surviving, or burning out and surviving. There are a few times...
It, like, burned in half.
Yeah, that's really gross. When he went down on his knees after he got the rod, I thought, oh my god, is he dead? Like, I really thought he was dead at the beginning, but... apparently not. They track him down and they find him. And there's some points here that I'm not 100% sure what you're referring to with the burnt on his head. So you might have to kind of pick that up there.
Okay, well, I don't know if you noticed, but his right hand actually looked burnt. Like, there was pink flesh underneath. And all we've ever seen of Parrish before is him basically covered in soot. So he doesn't... He's immune to fire. Like, that's his whole point. But his hand definitely looked burnt. And I was trying to figure out why that could have possibly been the case.
I don't know. I can't say I noticed if it was a dramatic amount. Maybe it was just the lighting, or maybe it wasn't meant to be like that, or maybe he does sort of burn and really quickly heal and he hadn't finished healing.
Yeah, because he got a metal pole through his chest. That's totally possible. Yeah. I was also wondering, too, if it could have had anything to do with, like, the electricity from Josh, or even him, like, coming into flames and burning Corey.
I don't know either. And again, I don't remember why Plan B at this point was relevant. I thought the Plan B was later on.
Well, it wasn't. This was just a funny point because somebody says Plan B, and then I think...
Oh, he mentioned, like, the Plan B, and then later on you find out more about the Plan B.
Well, there was no Plan B. There totally wasn't a Plan B to begin with. Scott definitely didn't have a Plan B at this point in time. Parrish later says...
Was he Plan B? Or was he Plan A?
He was Plan A because he had to get them... Well, oh, maybe he was Plan B because they weren't initially thinking that lockdown was going to be an issue, but... I don't know. I just feel like there wasn't really a Plan B, and it was just funny, like, even later when Lydia's like, you had a plan?
Yeah, I enjoyed them, you know, being like, okay, Parrish, so we kind of need the other you, you know, we need the other guy, and, like, they, like, make a fireball in his face in order to bring it out, which is handy.
Yeah.
But it turns out that when he walks through Mountain Ash, that he kills it. He basically, his presence, like, he can burn through the barrier, and he literally incinerates it up. Like, so he wipes it out, and so he clears the path behind him for Scott and Liam and anyone else who wants to enter the parts of Eichenhaus that were bound by Mountain Ash, which is unexpected. Like, you know, that's a handy skill.
Yeah. Two thoughts about this. One is, like, kind of important and thoughtful. The other one isn't. I'll go with the latter first. The blue fire was really, really beautiful. And I hope that once upon a time, when they bring in Hades, can channel this beautiful blue fire for him. We know he's going to have blue hair, but I wasn't too convinced by the picture. And I'm just saying, watch some Teen Wolf. This was some beautiful blue fire.
Yeah,
you should use it.
Haven't you already got that yet? Like, I thought that already happened.
It hasn't happened on the show. We just got a still of the actor blue hair. I was not that excited. It looked weird. It just, I don't know. But anyway,
sorry.
That's unimportant. The other thing is, Parrish is crazy powerful. And I know we kind of knew this already, but he seems impenetrable. Like, what could actually kill this guy? He can cross over Mountain Ash. Not only does he do that, he destroys it. He can get a metal pole through his chest and his body just burns it out of him. Like, the Kanama claws don't do anything to him. He's so incredibly powerful. Maybe he's just built to withstand the beast, and that's why he's that strong. But it really shocks me that he can do all of this stuff.
You're saying that, and I feel like that he's going to die this season.
No, don't say that.
I don't know what would kill him, but I feel like he might die this season.
The beast?
Maybe. I don't know. I mean, I hope he doesn't, but I feel like he might.
Let's hope we do not get to that point.
Anyway.
But speaking about the beast... we also find out from Valak that it's not yet fully grown, and it's still bound to the teenage chimera host inside of it. And the Dread Doctors are the ones trying to remind the beast of the serial killer it once was, and then the beast will, I guess, be fully grown, and the teenager inside of it will have been destroyed, and the beast will, like, once more be this horrific creature that it once was. Not that it hasn't been horrific up to this point, but I guess it's going to get worse.
So, yeah, when we were trying to puzzle out the point of someone writing Damnatio Memoriae around, it is definitely confirmed now that it is the Dread Doctors, or it is the, you know, whoever it is, you know, that wants the beast to be spurned on, is writing these things to make the beast remember who it was when it was the beast originally, which is kind of one of the theories I had when we were talking about that. That it wasn't someone trying to get it to remember to transform back out of being the beast into being a person. It's someone trying to make the human brain turn into the, you know, whoever it used to be with that old serial killer, like resurrect the spirit of that old serial killer. So that could be incredibly terrible.
Yeah, I mean, it's not good. I hope that does not happen, but who knows? And throughout this episode, I feel like we were on the brink of learning who the beast was, not only in the information that we got, but just like some of the feelings I got from some of the scenes felt like setups. And I'll get to more of that later, but it was very strange, and it felt pointed, but at the same time, I didn't know exactly where they were going with it. However, we do learn that a young man or a young woman could be the beast. It could be someone they know, and it's some other way that they could have two sets of DNA, because they already found all of the genetic chimeras. So Valak suggests it's some other way somebody can have two sets of DNA. The interesting parts about this is, once again, they say a young man or a young woman, so they're not just referring to it as a he or an it. It's definitely like, well, it could be a girl, it could be a guy. He does say it's someone you might know, so I'm thinking it's somebody we've already seen before, and they have two different sets of DNA through a weird, like, other way.
Okay.
So we have to, like, think outside of the box, which I think we've been coming to the conclusion to up to this point, because we're like, who the hell could it be? I thought we found all the chimeras. But does this kind of give you, like, does it narrow down any of your theories?
Not really. I'm trying to think about other ways that you can have two sets of DNA. The only other one I can think of is, like, having an undeveloped twin, like if you like when you sometimes like one twin absorbs the other in utero, and it means that like you have two sets of DNA, and that the twin is basically just like a weird tumor. It's really like, I don't know how to describe it, but that's kind of the only one that I know about. It basically during, and like a natural chimera as opposed to a one that's right. Like, oh, we cut out your eye and now it's in another person is, for example, there was a court case about a woman who was like denied, like government, like assistance, welfare because, they said that her kids weren't her own kids. The DNA didn't match her own. And it turns out that, like, some of her tissue had one set of DNA and some had another. And it turns out it was because she had cells of basically her cells engulfed the cells of a twin in utero. And talking about, like, in the cellular level, but it means that there are some cells in the body with one DNA and some cells in the body with another. That was like one of the things that I've heard of. But aside from that, I don't know how you could do it.
Okay, how about this? Remember the dude in the tank that Theo sucked the juices out of in order to bring the chimeras back?
Yeah.
What if that contains his DNA and when somebody injected a dead body. Yes, I'm thinking of Allison here, though I'm feeling less and less confident of that theory. It brought them back to life. And that, like the Dread Doctors, what if the Dread Doctors had injected that stuff into somebody else to bring them back to life, to make them a chimera in order to both resurrect them and the beast?
Yeah, it could be. I really don't know. They really keep harping on that it's a teenager as well. I'm like, why are they so determined that it's a teenager if they don't know who it is? But anyway.
Okay. Well, lots of theories. We still don't know. I'm really hoping next week we find out. I feel like we're to this point.
What, do you think we're going to find out who it is?
Yeah. I mean, they have Lydia back now, so I just feel like they're going to figure out a way. And, like, Theo has the mask. I just really hope they're going to figure out who it is. Mm. And historically, about 3 to 4 episodes before the end, we usually find out a big piece of the puzzle, and then, like, there's a twist, and we have to deal with that twist in the final couple of episodes. So maybe they'll still do it that way. Who knows?
Yeah.
But anyway, let's talk about the most important part of this episode, because everybody wants to know, Natalie, how did you feel when Lydia blew, like, half of Alec's face off? And by face, I mean skull.
Not great. I mean, he wasn't the best guy, but I feel like he had more interesting potential than he was used for, if you know what I mean. I feel like that he could have been a better ally to them and have more interesting stories to tell, and kind of been a better adult mentor or, you know, weird advisor in some way. I feel like he could have been a really... Just his personality and his vibe, I feel like he could have had a really good place on the show, and that it was not used to its full potential because now he has no head.
Yeah. I don't necessarily feel that way, just because...
Would you rather him be their weird advisor or Deaton?
Deaton.
Really?
I don't... Yes! Valak is not a good person. I realize Deaton's not the best guy either, but Valak is crazy. Fine. But listen, I'm disappointed that he was killed off too, just because he seemed to have a lot of knowledge, and especially a lot of history with the Dread Doctors. This definitely could have been somebody that they... It was like the lesser of two evils. Like, they could have gone to him, kind of like Peter. Like, Peter... They didn't like Peter, but Peter knew things, so they kind of kept him around because they needed him. They, like, just tolerated him. I feel like the pack could have just tolerated Valak and been like, look, don't do any experiments, and we won't run you out of town, or something like that.
Yeah.
But they've killed him off now, and I just feel like, God, he could have contributed, like, so much history to the show that it's really too bad we had to get rid of him.
Yeah, because it's mentioned several times as well, like, you know, what happened when the Dread Doctors came before. If that's something that they just never deal with, I'm going to be not happy. Because, like, I feel like we have to know about, like, if this is something from the past, you know?
Yeah, well, I think... The conclusion we're meant to make is that the Dread Doctors were Valak's experiments, and so he created them.
Really?
And they kind of...
I didn't get this at all.
I think that's essentially what they said, I believe, because he did all of these experiments, and, like, he had the mask, and, like, I think he was trying to prove the supernatural existed, and...
Wow, this
because
is not
because they,
what
like,
I got
ran
from it,
off
but
or
okay.
something.
That's a.
I don't. It's a bit convoluted, honestly. Like, I'm not really sure how the timeline goes, but considering he's so connected to the Dread Doctors, he has one of their masks, we know he was doing experiments, all this other stuff, it led me to believe that, but there could definitely be, like, another reason.
I mean, yeah, I don't know. He's dead. It's also the idea of Lydia, you know, has she outright killed someone before?
No.
So she's gonna have to deal with that?
Probably. To be fair, was it that big of a deal?
I mean, no, but, like, she's a human girl with feelings, and she...
Yeah.
Killed someone, so presumably this is something that people have an issue with at points.
Yeah,
you know,
I mean, it definitely
Styles killing someone was such a big drama.
Right. I think there is a difference between the two, but you're absolutely right that you know, hopefully we do see how this affects her. It was completely out of her control in that he kind of caused her to kill him.
Yeah.
It was an accident, but he's definitely the reason why it essentially happened.
Was he not worried about that happening to him when they were doing, like, you know, if he knew that she could, like, you know, suck in everyone around her and kill them, was he not worried about that with her? Like, was he not worried that he was going to get killed?
I think he put precautions into place so that wouldn't happen because he wanted to get her out of there and complete his experiment as quickly as possible. He also had the stereo in place in order to calm her mind so that she wouldn't burst, but the universe was kind of working against him. And when that stereo blew, it was over. So he probably thought he was going to be okay as long as he got it done quickly enough, but clearly he didn't.
Mm. Fair enough. Oh, well, sucks to be Valak. So, you know, in the meantime, Styles and Theo managed to find Lydia by going through the, you know, the tunnels. Styles has his, like, moment of, ugh, Theo, you idiot, you moron, you're no good, you're useless, do I have to do everything for you? Which is really great because, you know, Theo needs at least one person in his life treating him like that. So Styles, you know, figures out the kind of science of it and, you know, breaks the pipes so he can listen to the echo through the pipes. They track down Lydia and basically find this situation. Did they witness the head getting blown off or did they come in right after?
I believe they came in right after.
Yeah, so basically they find, you know, Lydia there with her, you know, her dead doctor, and they find the mask, which Theo eyes up very, you know, covetously, and off he goes with his dread doctor mask, basically. And, you know, I don't know if he's going to try and use it on himself or use it on someone else or what he thinks is going to happen there. So, yeah, any theories there about what you think is going to happen with Theo and the mask?
I don't think he's dumb enough to put it on himself. He's definitely gonna... I mean, he's gonna do everything he can to make sure that somebody else takes that on. I mean, Valak never put it on himself, you know? I mean, it killed Nurse Cross, so I think Theo's definitely going to put it on somebody else.
Okay, who?
Deucalion, maybe?
Maybe.
Hopefully not Hayden.
What exactly does he think it can be used for? Like, what exactly is it that he can use it for?
To find out who the Beast is.
And how does that work?
We don't know yet.
Okay. That's helpful. Right. So, like, putting on that mask, is it to do with, like, the frequency, like those weird goggles that he made Malia wear?
I would assume.
Yeah. Interesting. I don't know. Anyway, more importantly than that, you know, Styles kind of comes in and is all, we're going to get you out of here. And, you know, that's when she's all like, no, you have to leave. You're going to die. And, you know, all of that kind of thing. And because she can't control her screaming. And basically, Parrish is the one that ends up blocking Lydia's scream. Like, she screams uncontrollably and, you know, the boys are going to die and all of that. Parrish, you know, carries her out of the big cloud of smoke. You know, she's passed out and Parrish saves her and saves everyone else by blocking her scream. So again, like, that kind of dichotomy of, like, the two powers that cancel each other out is nice. But yeah, everyone gets a turn at saving Lydia in this episode.
Yeah, pretty much. Which is cool because hopefully by the end Lydia's gonna save everybody else. But I loved this scene so much. I love that, like, everyone really does take a hand at rescuing her, which was really great to see everyone come together. I loved that Parrish, in his hellhound form, knew exactly what to do. I mean, he shoves Styles out of the way, and then he just wraps Lydia in this big bear hug, and she, you know, kind of explodes, and he takes it all in. And when he emerges from the smoke, he's Parrish again. So it, like, knocked him out of whatever happens when he's the Hellhound, and he's just like, okay, where am I taking her? Let's go. Let's get out of here. And it was just this whole, like, coming together and seeing Lydia uncontrollable like that is very difficult because you feel so bad for her. She can't help it, and it's so dangerous to everyone, including herself. And she's holding it in so much throughout the episode. Mm-hmm. And when she finally does let go, like, thank God, in that instance, Parrish was there for her.
Her acting in this episode, like, just how strained and, like, kind of not with it that she was most of the time was really quite something, I thought, as well.
Yeah, and Holland can be a bit creepy when she wants to be. Like, that kind of hazy, like, my friends, they're all going to die kind of thing. Like, she's pretty good at that. And clearly it's not, like, Lydia's fault that she's being creepy. It's, like, this banshee power that kind of takes over her in a way. But, yeah, I really enjoyed her in this episode, especially anytime she was with Styles. It was just really fantastic.
Yeah.
So before we get to that whole thing, which I'm sure we'll have plenty to say about, a couple of things that happened before then is that Mason ends up turning off the power with Hayden's help. And this is another one of those scenes that felt important, but I couldn't necessarily figure out why. I don't know if Mason's bit was in there just as comic relief, but he felt more important than that. And it felt like, did Hayden really have to be there too? Maybe to help him and everything, but it was just strange. And it also felt like a setup to me. And a lot of people have been like, oh, Mason's totally the beast. Mason's totally the beast. And I feel like, if he is, this is one of the scenes that we're going to go back to and been like, oh, if he would have crashed his car into that wall, he probably would have, like,
turned into the beast.
Yeah, I was going to say hulked out, and I'm like, no, he would have beasted out? That does not sound good.
Yeah.
But yeah, I'm wondering if we'll be like, oh, in that moment, we could have figured it out if that had happened. So did it feel strange to you?
No, not at all. I didn't think that at all. So, I don't know, maybe I'm just different, but no, I wasn't thinking about it from that perspective. I thought we figured out that he wasn't the beast. Maybe not.
Not yet, not that I recall. But anyway, he was really funny in this scene, and I loved how he's like, okay, I'm totally just going to crash my car, the car that my parents bought me for my birthday, it's fine, I'm going to do it because I'm going to save my friends, and then Hayden shows up and he, like, has a heart attack.
I found it really, really cute the way that Mason was like, can we use your car, when Hayden shows up, and she's like, no, no. And then, obviously, she goes on to jump up there and achieve what it is that she achieves with all of the levers and pulls off what Mason was meant to pull off. But the one thing that I wanted to ask about her is, I can't remember, what type of Chimera is she meant to be?
She's like the Werejaguar.
Really?
Mm-hmm. Because remember, she had a connection with Noah because Noah was a berserker.
Yeah, okay, if you say so. I do remember them saying that, but I still don't know why they're meant to have a connection. Why, just because they're both from the same bit of mythology or whatever?
Yeah, I think so.
Okay, whatever. But, yeah. Anyway, she kind of achieves that, and like you said, it was kind of, it could have been a moment to reveal Mason as the beast if he hulked out, but we didn't have that, so maybe it was a really convenient intervention, and maybe it wasn't. Maybe it's total red herring, or maybe we're making something out of nothing.
Yeah, maybe everybody's theories that it's Mason is just finally getting to me.
Yeah.
So then everybody escapes. Obviously, the power's been shut down, and everybody gets out there. And they think they're in the clear, and then Tracy comes and tries to take Lydia, but Mrs. Martin stops her, obviously. But Tracy, once again, just proving that she's terrible and that she really enjoys being part of Theo's pack. And I'm just really disappointed because I really liked her in the beginning.
Crazy Bellatrix. Yeah. She's a sociopath. Like, it's like really intense, like that she's really into it and she wants to achieve this for Theo and she gets a real kick out of it. And obviously we know the boys aren't really like that and they keep being like, do we have to? But she's mega into it, and I have no idea if it's just because, like, she's the Kanema, like, you know, and that's a very malevolent being, I guess, you know, it has some sort of unconscious nastiness to it, or if it's because it's just who she is. She didn't really seem like that before.
No, she didn't, but with the insertion of the Kanema, like, I can't imagine that maybe that's part of it, because she seemed like a really sweet girl before. Now she's just gone off the deep end.
Yeah, what a shame. I wonder if she'll die.
Maybe. But going back to Mrs. Martin, she pops up here and she saves Lydia from Tracy, zaps her with the baton thing. And it's just really satisfying that she's like, okay, somebody get my daughter out of here kind of thing, and that she's, like, on board now. That was a long time coming. They've been setting it up for quite a while.
Yeah, I mean, I wonder how much guilt she's going to have about putting Lydia in there in the first place.
Yeah, it's frustrating because she knew the kind of treatment that her mother had.
Yeah, yeah, the mother-in-law, whatever her name was. Is it,
Yeah.
Yeah, the grandma.
Lorraine?
Yeah, Lorraine. I was going to say Elaine. Irene. No, Lorraine. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, I don't know if she really thought that was best, you know. Clearly she did, but maybe she was so unwilling to, like, give over to supernatural stuff that she was like, gotta do this. Did she have any impression that Eichen was supernatural before then, or? Like, she sort of knew a little bit about Lorraine, but she never clearly believed. She just thought it was, like, a hospital. So,
yeah. I don't really understand where she is in her head, because she specifically says, I know how to survive in Beacon Hills. So she knows something weird is going on, she's but it's like she refuses. Yeah, she refuses to believe that it's like to actually put the name supernatural on it.
Yeah.
And so I think since the sheriff, like, you know, threw down that file folder in front of her, she's kind of coming to terms, which is why she went to Eichen House. So maybe now she's like, all right, I can't ignore it any longer. This is actually what's happening.
Yeah. Fun. Well, hopefully she'll be of some use now that she's, you know, decided to actually, I guess, become on board or, like, trust these people.
Yeah. And she's got to know that they've been working on this for quite a while, because she was shut out of Eichen House completely. I assume that she's just been, like, walking around the building the whole night trying to find a way in.
Because we see her arrive in the past episode in, what's it called? I can't remember.
Amplification.
Amplification. I was like, abomination. I'm like, no, that's way back. Amplification. And she's walking around the perimeter, and I guess she's just been there the whole night being like, what the hell? How do I get in here? Like, you know, and then once she realizes that the security's gone, she kind of equips herself with a weapon and just starts looking for her daughter, which is nice, I guess.
Yeah, it's good that she's being proactive about it, but, like, unfortunately, there wasn't really anything she could do by that point. But they all make it into the Jeep, and, well, not all of them, but the main peeps make it into the Jeep, and Lydia's having a really hard time keeping all these voices straight in her head and keeping her screams inside, and she lets one go, and it, like, cracks the mirror, and Styles's ear starts bleeding. And he's, like, trying to comfort her by saying, Lydia, you're gonna make it, and she's like, but you're not. And not that I think that they're going to kill off Styles, because Dylan's been confirmed for season 6, but there's been a lot of predictions in these two episodes, and even in the past, where, like, you know, Lydia's meant to be dying or something, and Styles could die, and all of her friends could die. And I'm like, are these premonitions? Are they, like, prophecies that they have to change? Or is she just saying, like, if this doesn't happen the way that it's supposed to happen, everybody could die? Like a warning kind of thing, not necessarily, like, this will come true.
Or does she think she's gonna kill them? Like, because, yeah, it just keeps, they keep, I kept being like, you know, it's like, they've got her out. Like, not the dangers, obviously there's still the beast and everything like that. But what was the thing she feared happening? Obviously the thing she feared happening, or the thing she was kind of predicting was happening, was not what was happening inside Eichen House. It's like a bigger picture thing that she's, you know, because she keeps saying, what I'm stuck on is she said to Styles, like, if you come here or if you stay here, as in when they're in Eichen, if you stay, you're going to die. And then later he's like, it's okay, you're going to make it. And she says, but you're not. Like, what about, to me, it seems like there is something about the act of them going to Eichen to rescue her that means they are now at risk from something, if you know what I mean.
Right. So she's not saying you're going to die right here and right now, but if you rescue me tomorrow, you're going to die from something else kind of thing. Like, yeah, it's like a future proclamation.
Well, as in that, you know, she stayed, you know, when he came in to visit her, she was like, you know, if you stay, you're going to die. And it just seems like there's something about what went down means that there is now a further danger to them, if you know what I mean. Whether it's from, I don't know, Theo, or obviously Valak. I mean, he's a bit dead, but or if it was literally something like that, you know, they're now marked for the beast in some way, or if it's something to do with, like, you've got me out and I'm a liability and I'm gonna kill you all, you know, like, I don't know. But it really felt like she was saying there was something about what you've done now means that you are going to die. Not just in general, you're going to die.
I mean, I don't like the idea, but it makes sense that, like, this kind of marks them now, because they've gotten Lydia out. The Dread Doctors, I assume, are going to be putting pieces together as well. Maybe they'll realize that Lydia is a huge part of this, and so they're going to start going after them pretty hard now.
I don't know. It's weird.
Who knows? Well, either way, they survive the trip in the Jeep, and they make it to Deaton's office. And
God forbid anyone in this show ever go to a hospital. Like,
I mean, to be fair, I don't think the hospital people would have helped very much.
I mean, to be fair, she is, like, destroying stuff when she screams, but the mere hole in the head, I feel like the hospital could have fixed the actual hole in the head if it didn't have the attachment of the murder screaming.
Yes. But Deaton's solution is to shove a bunch of, like, mistletoe paste in her head, which, like, okay, cool, but it doesn't seem very sanitary.
Well, yeah, it kind of just reminded me of, like, wall filler, you know, when you, like, go along and you go on a gap with, like, some silicone filler, like, and it goes zoom and puffs up. I'm like, ew, that's, I mean, I'm grossed out enough by that, like, let alone having it happen to my head. But I was thinking about whether we've seen, you know, mistletoe before in the show, and it was used by Jennifer Blake. Like, I'm pretty sure, isn't that what Danny kind of vomits up everywhere, like, when he's...
Yeah.
In hospital, and I'm trying to remember what properties they said it had on the show, if you know what I mean. It's definitely, like, a strong thing in Norse mythology, because of, it's meant to be, like, the only thing that could kill, the only plant which Balder, who's the son of Odin, was vulnerable to. And if you guys read American Gods by Neil Gaiman, there's a whole thing about that in there as well. But I'm trying to think, and obviously there's the stuff about, like, the kissing and the mistletoe, but I'm trying to wonder, like, what scientific properties it has, if it's a poison, or what the context of it was in Teen Wolf, if you know what I mean, in what it was that they were using for Danny, or what effect it has on the supernatural.
Yeah, it definitely made Danny sick. So it can be used as sort of like poison, I guess. But also, Scott threw it on Jennifer Blake to reveal her as the Duroc. So it has, like, other more supernatural properties, too. I don't know what exactly Deaton is going for here. Like, if he'll explain that, you know, this is why this works in this instance. But, you know, mistletoe, I guess, is used, like, the druids do use it quite a bit in various, like, rituals and stuff. Mm. So, I don't know. I mean, I'm sure we're not really supposed to be looking at that too closely, but, and not that it was random or anything, because it's not like we've never seen mistletoe used on the show before, but
it's just like, it, there it is.
Yeah, it was an interesting choice, like, but I'm always glad when they use things other than, like, oh, Wolfsbane has yet another property that we can use it for, or something yeah. like that, so... Yeah. So I guess we can jump right to the big scene, because this is definitely like a huge deal on a lot of different levels. But they plug Lydia up and it's good, but she lets off one last scream and it's a big one. And she knocks out all the windows and stuff, and she kind of like passes out or something right afterwards. And Styles is like worrying over her, like, please wake up, please wake up. And it's a really good scene. And I just like, they took so long for her to wake up again. It felt like 20 minutes because I was like, okay, she can't be dead. She can't. Well, actually, I went through like all the stages of grief because I was like, she can't be dead. But then I was accepting it. But then I was angry about it. Then I went back to denial again. And it was just, even watching it the second time, the same thing happened. It felt like so long.
I fully thought she was dead. I was like, oh my god, they've gotten away with killing off a lead character. Like, under everyone's noses, no spoilers that someone was leaving the show, no spoilers that there was going to be a big death, no, like, ominous marketing campaign, you know, like, they've just done it. Like, raw, there it is, she's gone. And now they have to deal with it. But no, that didn't happen. I mean, I wouldn't have really wanted it to, but I seriously thought they'd done it.
Yeah. I really didn't think they would, because they have been touting Lydia as, like, the one that might save them all. Not only in the show, but outside the show,
then
too.
Then it would be like, what do you do when the person who's meant to save you is gone?
Yeah, that's true.
But anyway.
It would have really been a horrible end to her, though, considering, like, she's finally now just grasping her powers and everything. Then, whoop, she's gone.
Life isn't fair, Karen.
This is true. But what I really liked here was Styles' reaction to it, because, like, even the littlest details, like him wiping the glass shards off of her eyelids and... and when she wakes up and, like, they grasp hands and the way that they look at each other is just, it was so good. Like, it had me on the edge of my seat like a lot of the action scenes tend to do. And I was just, like, really in the moment. And I think that sometimes those really intimate, like, not relationship, kind of like sexually intimate scenes, but the scenes where people are close and it's meaningful to them, sometimes I can really like it objectively, but this, I was just really into it, and it was a really calm, simple scene just between the two of them, despite the other people were in the room. And I loved it so much.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, even when her mum, you know, rushes in and stuff like that, she's like, yeah, yeah, they're their mum. It's still all about Styles. You know, he's right over there. He saved me, etc. And it's interesting because it's like it really felt, yeah, I was not expecting it. Obviously, he's always first one there for her. He's the one, you know, visiting her when she's sick. He's the one, you know, every moment. Like, there's never been a moment of this show where he doesn't put her first in a really personal way, like in a, you know, oh, yes, everything's bad. Yes, we've got to, when it comes down to the line, we've got to save our friends. But, like, he's always the one, like, you know, visiting her in hospital or checking up on her or, like, you know, just a little, like, sort of personal human way, not like, oh, this is crazy supernatural, so we've all got to protect each other. Like, he's still always just the one that's there. And, you know, she says to, you know, she says to Mrs. Martin, like, you know, he saved my life, Mom, like, Styles saved me. And they're just sort of looking at each other, even though her mother is hanging on to her. And it just felt like this is the moment that they both know, like, that they're in love with each other.
Yeah, it feels like a turning point. And I'm not even saying that, like, okay, you know, the next time we see them, they're going to be, like, making out in the book stacks or something like that. But I wrote an article about their relationship over the course of the last 5 seasons, and it's incredible how far they've come, both as individuals but also as friends. Because way back in season 1, Lydia didn't even know who Styles was. I mean, he was completely invisible to her. And I think a lot of that started to turn when he noticed her intelligence, when she hid it from literally everybody else. He noticed, and that kind of caught her attention. But even in season 2, she ignored him, and she still loved Jackson despite the fact that they had broken up and everything. And then on through both parts of season 3 and into 4, they became best friends, like really good friends. And my favorite part about that is Styles never expected anything more from her. And I feel like maybe it's just because we're like rewatching it right now, but with Buffy and Xander always kind of like expects something from Buffy, and he constantly is saying to her like, "Oh, don't go out with that guy. He's really bad for you."
And like cutting like, down, like yeah, all these other things.
Yeah,
so you're putting his own motivations onto things that isn't really nice, you know. And yeah, Styles has never been like that with
never. Lydia. He's always been very respectful of Lydia. And I feel like even though his feelings never changed, he also began to see her as like more of a person. Like he stopped putting her on that pedestal. And that was really important. And he moved on in a lot of ways. And of course she had her various flings and stuff like that. And now it's so good, because even if this doesn't mean that they're together right now or they'll be together very soon, it feels like, once again, it's another step in the direction of their friendship, where they just, regardless of romance, they've kind of declared to each other how much they love each other.
Yeah.
Even just as people. And it was really deep and organic, and I loved it.
Yeah, and it is. It's interesting because I do think that, you know, it will eventually be a romance. This episode had, like, the two big scenes. Like, when he first came and got her in the chair, and then here, totally different but massive, like, musical cues, like, romantic hero songs. And in the previous episode when he was visiting her in Icon as well, same, romantic songs. But it's more that they're kind of, like, yeah, like, as they've sort of grown together in this scenario, it's sort of become very clear that, like, no matter who they're romantically involved in, and it's not like, oh, I'm not with Lydia, I'll settle for her. It's kind of like they don't think about each other in a romantic way, like, because it's more than that. It's kind of like, it's not, like, based from a crush. It's not, like, based from lust. It's based in, like, love and protectiveness and of just being that important to each other. And so it doesn't mean that they're not, you know, attracted to other people. It doesn't mean that they weren't, you know, entertaining the ideas of other people. They certainly did. Like, you know, Malia and Styles is a very genuine relationship. And, it did have its start in, like, a very hot, like, hormonal situation. And they sort of worked together like that. And then Lydia's had several other relationships that have meant, you know, various amounts to her. But when it sort of comes down to the wire, it's like they are the most important person to each other in whatever way. It's not really necessarily romantic. But that being said, like, now that there is no one else, as in now that they don't have, oh, well, I've got this massive pile of feelings about Lydia and I've got a girlfriend. Like, now that there's no one else, it would be very easy and also make all the sense in the world for it to slip into romance in a way more than like a teenage, oh, we're finally dating way. You know, it's more like we're partners. And I feel like that is what's going to happen. That it's going to literally be like, well, we're clearly prioritizing ourselves. We're clearly prioritizing each other in every other aspect of life. We're clearly willing to do anything for each other. We clearly, you know, want to help each other and would do anything for each other. The only missing piece is that we're not, like, you know, excluding all others from our relationship, I guess. And I feel like that they could slip into being literally, like, married couple-esque partners from this, if that makes sense.
It does. As you were saying that, I'm like, you're right. It feels so much deeper
more
than
mature,
just like...
it's not like... Yeah.
Yeah, mature is, I think, the best way to describe it, because it's not this thing like between Styles and Malia where it was clearly very lustful in the beginning, and yet they still care deeply for each other, and I believe that. And, I mean, I really, really like Styles and Malia together. I really like Malia on her own. And even on the flip side of that, you know, Parrish and Lydia, I think, have fantastic chemistry. But there's a difference between that and everything that Styles and Lydia have gone through together. And they know everything about each other, basically, and all of their deepest fears and their, you know, darkest secrets and this kind of thing. And I feel like that just means so much more than, okay, yeah, I think you're really hot and I want to kiss you now. Because clearly they would give up their lives for each other.
Yeah.
And I'm not saying that, like, Malia wouldn't do that for Styles, but this feels like it's on a whole nother level.
Yeah, it's kind of like if you're at the point where you're the most important person to someone else and they're the most important person to you, and you know what you share is the most important bond possible, like, why bother with anyone else, if you know what I mean? Like, you know, even if you weren't necessarily going in thinking, oh, I feel romantic about you, if you know what I mean, some things, some quote-unquote romantic relationships are not actually about their romantic aspects, if you know what I mean. They are about every other aspect of the relationship that means that they're not going to work with anyone else because this relationship is their priority, regardless of whether it is seen as a lustful falling in love relationship or if it is a quiet kind of partnership relationship. Steve and Bucky is a very good example of that. It's obviously not a canon relationship, but it's why people ship it. It's because they're like, literally no point in either of those people trying to even kid themselves that they care about anyone more than they do each other, that they could be married to someone else or something like that, you know? And that's why so many people are hung up on that relationship, and I feel like this is where Styles and Lydia are at.
Yeah, it feels almost backwards in a way, and I don't mean that negatively, but, like, they've fallen in love completely with each other, and then they move on to, like, the more physical relationship. And it's like all that other stuff is in place. And you're right. It's like, what's the point in resisting that when clearly they care that much for each other?
Yeah. So I think it could, I could literally see it going in the next episode. I'm not sure if it will or not, but I could actually see it the next episode opening. You said making out in the stacks. I don't mean like that. I mean, like, I could see the next episode opening on them having acknowledged that they are together, for lack of better term. Like, they're like, oh, yeah, this is, you know, and it's the kind of relationship that really also transcends, like, anything that you would stick a high school label on as well. So it's a bit difficult. But I could see the next episode opening with, you know, like, golden light and them, like, lying in bed, like, or on bed, like, just, like, staring at each other and touching each other's faces and being like, you know it's you and it's not going to be anyone else and we have to deal with this together, I guess, and all of that, and just already having acknowledged that this is what they are. I don't know if that's what they will do or not, but it wouldn't feel unearned to me if it cut literally into that, if you know what I mean.
I agree. The problem I have with that is, like, we've waited so long that I need, like, to see every instant of them together and how that builds up and everything, because I feel like even though it would make sense for them to just kind of cut into, like, okay, yeah, this is a thing, and even though romance has always been pivotal but not the focal point of the show, I feel like this is important enough that it needs, like, its own moment. And if we don't get that, like, it's just going to be, like, I think it's because, like I said, we've waited so long for this, and because I want it so badly now. I mean, this episode really convinced me how much I want this. I need to have that, like, payoff, I guess.
Of, like, one of them coming to the other and being, like, so.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Plus, like, I wouldn't mind seeing, like, kind of awkward Styles.
Yeah. Who do you think it would be? Do you think it would be her? Do you think it would be her being, like...
No, I really don't. I think it would be him. Yeah. Because he would be, like... Like, I think she would be okay just sitting back and seeing what happens, whereas, like, I feel like Styles would, like, need to talk about it.
Yeah, that's probably true. Well, it's... There it is.
Yeah.
And, yeah, so that's... Yeah, that's hopefully gonna happen, and yeah, that should be interesting. So by the end of the season, perhaps they will be truly together.
Yeah, maybe. And then how do you think the other two are gonna handle that, Parrish and Malia? Not that, like, Parrish was with Lydia or anything, but no. Clearly has some feelings for her.
I'm confused about all of his visions about her, because we don't know whether that's really her subconscious or whether that was a projection of his own subconscious, but he's made out with it a lot of times, whatever it is. So, yeah, there's definitely chemistry there. And you know, Teen Wolf has never done a scenario that I can think of where it's like, I know that we kind of had a thing, but I'm with this person now, so we have to not have a thing. Because they haven't kissed in real life or anything. It's just, you know. And,
right.
You know, we've never had that. I don't even know if Lydia is, like, thinking about him in that context. But I don't know what his deal is with Lydia. It's quite weird. But it was one of the reasons why I thought he might die, like, to get him out of the way, so there wouldn't be, like, Parrish at a loose end without Lydia.
See, that would feel so bad to me, like, so disingenuous to the importance of his character, because he is important on his own without Lydia. I mean, clearly they're connected very, very closely because of the whole Harbingers of Death thing, but he's also got his own powers and his own story. He's the one that's meant to go up against the Beast. And, yeah, maybe he'll die in that battle and then, you know, we'll be done with it. But I love Parrish so much. I think he's really
been
funny.
He's very pivotal this season. Like, he's yeah. the lead. He should be in the opening credits. Like, he's a lead. So, yeah, he's been pretty crucial.
Maybe season 6, they'll bring him on.
If he's not dead. More.
Yeah. Stop saying he's gonna die.
Sorry.
What about Malia? I mean, I feel like she still cares about Styles, but I also feel like this is kind of the end of their chapter. Like, not just because of the Styles and Lydia thing, but it feels like she's, you know, she's got her own issues now with her mother and everything, and I feel like they've just kind of grown apart a little bit, not in a bad way, but in a, okay, you know, it's going to be hard to be friends, but we've obviously gone through a lot of stuff together. We can't exactly just not talk to each other anymore. We're part of the same pack, but also, like, we're not, I don't want to say, like, they're not good for each other, because I think they were in a lot of ways, especially in season 4.
It was just they were right for each other at the time.
Yeah, exactly.
What I'd like to see is a conversation between Kira and Malia, and Kira being all like, but isn't it weird for you? Like, are you not? Like, how are you even dealing with this? Like, you know, he loved her before and then he was with you and now he's loved, you know, he loves her again. Like, how does it make you feel? Like, and, you know, I couldn't handle that. You know, like, when I was getting together with Scott and, like, Allison was still in the picture and, like,
Kira losing her mind and Malia just being like, I don't care, things happen, I'm a coyote, if you know what I mean. Like sort of her just being like, meh, it is what it is, if you know what I mean. I don't think that, you know, because we never saw any really private conversations between Malia and Styles that much, but I'd like Malia to be very uncaring about it and just be like, yeah, that is what it is. But she was so dedicated to him at first, if you know what I mean.
Right.
Or for her to maybe even acknowledge that that was the case, like acknowledge that, like, no, part of my attachment to him was that, like, I didn't know what the hell I was doing and he really helped me and now I'm okay on my own, like, if you know what I mean.
I would be okay with that because, for sure, in the beginning, it was this, like, no, that he's hers kind of thing. Like, this is my person and nobody else. Like, I don't have any other people. It's Styles. And she was like that. You know, she didn't really care about the rest of the pack until she slowly developed that love for the rest of them and that dedication to Scott. And I feel like now that she sees those other people around her giving up that part of Styles is not going to be all that difficult. I mean, like I said, I still feel like they care for each other a lot, but it's just one of those things where, like, they've changed. It is how it is. And I like the idea of Malia just kind of being like, well, whatever makes him happy. And, you know, I'll find my own other person at some point. God, as long as it's not Theo.
Oh, well, we'll see.
Yeah. The last big thing that I wanted to talk about in this scene that I've seen a lot of people bring up is this issue that Lydia says Styles saved her, but a lot of people are like, no, you know, Parrish saved her or everybody saved her because everybody was in on the plan.
Didn't help with this either.
Yeah, with the poll thing, I mean,
I don't know about that, man.
Come on, guys. But what I think is interesting here is that, yes, everybody helped save her. Everybody had a part in the plan. But it was Styles' plan? Like, I'm definitely not team, you know, Styles
discredit
did everything.
Them. Yeah.
Right. I think that Parrish in particular played a huge role. But even, you know, Kira had a huge job, too. With getting it to go into the brownout and stuff like that. And Scott's the leader, and so he shoulders a lot of responsibility. But it's Styles who is like, no, we have to do this now, and here's my plan, and here's my contingency plans, and all of this other stuff. And I feel like even though Styles and Scott came to the pack together, it was definitely like Styles is the one, like, we need to do this tonight.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. Like, to me, it was kind of more like that, you know, when she said that about him, like, she might have objectively known that, like, you know, it wasn't just Styles and everyone helped and, you know, she, you know, Parrish, whatever, like, everyone helped. But to her, like, at the moment, literally all she sees is Styles, if you know what I mean. Like, that it's, she thinks of being helped or saved or, you know, being safe. Not that I think, you know, Lydia is ever going to just be like, oh, a man saved me, I love him, if you know what I mean. Like, that's not very Lydia. But, like, yeah, being safe and having someone to help her, like, she, all she sees when she, that means Styles to her, if you know what I mean. So that's sort of what I thought about it.
Yeah. And plus, I think it's important to look at who she was saying this to, because Mrs. Martin has, God, been all over Styles for this
true.
Season.
It's kind of like, look, Mom, look, leave him
like
alone.
Like, he's not the bad guy here.
Yeah.
And I think that's a really important part of the equation as well.
Yeah, that's true. We've got feedback from Hypable and from some tweets and an email actually as well. First feedback we had was from the Hyperball comments, and it was from Brack saying, so it just may be that I'm hopped up on cold medication, but I woke up this morning with a new theory about the Beast's identity. What if it's Theo's sister? Maybe they gave her his heart and have been experimenting on her in secret all this time. So this is kind of my favorite theory about the Beast at the moment. I have a few thoughts about who the Beast could or should be, if you know what I mean. Like, because, I'll tell you what, Mason is an option. You know, he's there. He's an option. However, I don't know if I want it to be him, not purely because I like him. I mean, I do like him, and I don't want him to be a crazy murderer or anything like that. But what I feel about Mason is that he's kind of just the last good guy that we currently know, if you know what I mean. Like, so he's the last person around who isn't already someone spooky or hasn't already been a villain in the past, like Styles, if you know what I mean. And it would kind of feel a little bit like he's the only regular character left that it could plausibly be, which feels a bit too easy, if you know what I mean. And then it would be totally random for it to just be, like, literally someone we've never heard of before. Like, oh, it's, like, some guy, like, that mm-hmm. we missed for whatever reason. Oh, you know, that would be really weird, like, to have an introduction of no connection at all. So what I really want it to be is for it to be an Allison or a Theo sister or something like that, that it's the return of someone we've either met before or heard mentioned before, who is not currently in the show. That's what I want it to be.
Yeah, I completely agree. Because, and this is why I didn't want it to be Deputy Strauss, because even though we had seen him a few times and he had, like, played some sort of role to our main characters and everything, or even, like, the people around them with Deputy Clark, is, like, it wouldn't mean anything if it were him. Like, I wouldn't necessarily care if he lived or died, anything like that. I mean, clearly he's not a teenager, and we're pretty sure that it's a teenager, but it wouldn't mean anything. If it were Allison, God, that would mean so much. Like, I don't even want to think about all the repercussions of her coming back and everything, because one, makes me just want it even more, and two, like, it would be really hard on Scott and all of our heroes, but... Mm. I hadn't thought about it being Theo's sister up until this point, and now I'm like, it's excellent. I mean, you know, we've seen her a couple of times. It would make a lot of sense. We think she's dead and she's not, or she was dead and they brought her back just like they resurrected the Beast. And if they had switched hearts, like, would that possibly make Theo less of a monster? But also, what if Theo does try to kill it and it turns out to be his sister?
Well, that's why, you know, I wondered if Theo knew who the Beast was and was purposely trying to kill it because it was his sister, so that she doesn't, like, tell on him, if you know what I mean.
Oh, my God.
But a couple of theories. I had a theory about Allison, and then I also had a theory, actually, about Danny. You know, we always want, you know, people have been making grand statements about Danny for a very long time. But mm-hmm. I did remember that in season, I guess it was 3, Motel California, you know, he had that big surgery because him and Ethan are having the sexy times, and Ethan, you know, had that conversation. Oh, I've got scars. Oh, you know, I could make you not have scars. And he's like, no, I feel like a survivor. And I can't remember what it was that he has done. I think he had, like, chest, like, bones restructured or something. But I was wondering if there was anything in that surgery that could have made him a genetic chimera, if you know what I mean. So there's that to the side. Danny, always got to have a Danny theory. But Allison, do you remember Lyndon was talking about, like, right from the beginning of 5A, that they were laying groundwork for the wrap-up of 5B?
Yes.
And what's the emotional crux of the premiere of 5A?
God, I'm trying to think back to it now. What the hell happened?
Yearbook scene with Scott writing Allison's initials.
Right. Oh, God. Oh, God.
You gonna be okay?
Oh, that kind of just punched me in the heart.
Yeah, I thought of it this morning and I was just like, oh,
Yeah. Or Derek. Could it be Derek?
Oh, shut. It's not Derek.
Oh, man.
I hope it's not Derek. I hope Derek's okay. I'd like it if he came back in the finale to help, though.
That would be nice.
Yeah. Okay, so I do like the theory, but I feel like there's got to be something going on with Allison. Given that we know she's coming back for that single episode, given that they said that the groundwork was there from the beginning of 5A, I don't know, it's weird. Yeah. There's a tweet from Joni Benoni. Is the mistletoe a temporary cure, or are Lydia's banshee powers suppressed for good? I doubt they're going to be suppressed for good. Like, if she's just going to be like, she may have to work at, you know, figuring it out again. But again, we don't know what the hell the mistletoe actually did. Like, it clearly, you know, did something to her brain or her supernatural projection. But I think she's going to be okay, I hope.
I think it's a temporary cure in that, like, they're going to have to wash it out at some point, or, like, if it's not going to be absorbed, but you know what I mean? Like, it's not going to be there forever. And I doubt they're going to keep, like, pumping her full of mistletoe. That would be a little weird, because she still has a hole in her head, even though it's plugged up. But if we remember, Valak had a third eye. Like, he had a hole in his head. He did that to himself. And now it's just gone.
Yeah, because when we first met him, he just had the bandage wrapped around his head at all times. Right. And now it's not. You know, and we never really learned how he stopped being a patient in Eichenhaus and became a doctor. So clearly, did we ever actually find that out?
Well, he was a doctor first, and then became a patient, and then escaped, and I guess somehow stole the identity of that other doctor.
Does everyone else see him as Fenris? Like, do they look at him and see Fenris, and then it's only the supernaturals that see Valak, if you know what I mean?
I have no idea. It's so weird. Like, I don't know if that's going to be important if we're ever getting answers.
I need someone to break that down for me. Because, yeah.
Hopefully after 520 airs, we'll just gather up some questions and ask Will to explain everything to us. But, I mean, I think that she's going to be healed at some point. I wonder if that will dim her powers again once the hole is healed. Or if this has kind of opened that up and now she will always have to struggle with it. But I definitely don't think her powers are, like,
gone.
Suppressed in that, like, yeah, they're gone.
Yeah. Then the last one was an email from Ingrid asking, opinion on the amount of slow motion scenes in Teen Wolf. I'm not a fan myself. Also, a bit disappointed that Valak died so soon. I'm sure Natalie would agree. My answer to that is that I think Valak could have been used for better things. Like, I think he could have been used as an ally in a really interesting way. I wanted to know more about, you know, his history and what he could have offered them. I barely notice the slow-mo because I never notice slow motion or special effects or anything like that. I liked it when Styles was rushing into the lab room to save Lydia. I thought it was a good moment, but aside from that, I didn't notice any other bits in this episode. So if there was, I'm not the person to ask.
Going back to Valak, I'm sad that he died so soon too, because I also agree he had so much potential to be, like, not a mentor in a, like, good way, but as somebody that they go to for information, like Gerard, but less evil, and we actually like him. But the fact that they killed him off like this, like, I don't know, I think they could have explored that more. Clearly he had a lot of information, he had many ties to the Dread Doctors and just supernatural creatures in general. They could have kept going with that, but maybe it's like we're cutting off this flow of information, now you have to figure it out on your own kind of thing to kind of help push the story in a certain direction.
Yeah.
In terms of the slow-mo, I love slow motion. Like, I think it's really cool. I think they use it really well, and it kind of, like, enhances the emotions in the episode, because I remember it particularly in this episode when Styles is banging on the door after Valak took Lydia and he couldn't get it open. This is before Theo came and, like, kicked it down, and he was banging on it really, really hard, and on the last one they slowed it down, and it shows you, I think, how frustrated and angry and desperate he is, which I guess it could have done that anyway, but with this slow-mo, it just kind of brings it up another notch. So I actually always really like it.
Yeah, no, I'm fine with it. I'm not sure what it is that people don't like about it, but feel free to get technical and tell us if you really want to. Mm-hmm. But yeah,
I also really like it in fight scenes because I feel like a lot of fight scenes go so quickly that you don't necessarily see everything that's happening, and the way that they sometimes cut fight scenes, it's very back and forth or very like up close, here's a hand blocking another hand kind of thing, and the slow-mo like allows you to see the moves, but I'm also like really into that stuff, so
yeah,
could just be.
So next week's episode is A Credible Threat, where Scott and his pack use the charity lacrosse game in a deadly gambit to figure out the identity of the beast. All I know about this is that Coach is back. So
yeah, I mean, that's all we really need to know.
Do you think that we'll find out who the beast is in this episode?
I mean, it sounds like it, doesn't it? Like, it just kind of seems like if they're using this episode in particular to focus on a lacrosse game to figure out the identity of the beast, it would make sense that by the end we know who it is. And also, if you look back at, like, Teen Wolf history, the last three or four episodes are usually when, like, all the stuff goes down. And in that third or fourth episode from the last one, we usually get a big twist or a big reveal that leads to another big twist or big reveal in the, like, penultimate episode. So if you think back to, like, the Canima, and then we learned about Gerard, that sort of thing, it feels like they're setting up for something like that.
Yeah, no, that's possibly true. I don't know. We'll see. All right, is that everything we have for this week?
Yeah.
Okay, well, in that case, I guess we will see you next week for A Credible Threat. We'll try to get that episode out a little bit earlier. Sorry about the delay on this one. We just had to re-record something at the end, which was a bit of a problem. So sorry that you're hearing this a little bit late. So, yeah, until then, bye-bye. You can go read Karen's article about Styles and Lydia. And, yeah, we'll see you next week for A Credible Threat. Bye.
Okay, bye.
'Cause even underneath the waves, I'll be holding on to you. And even if you slip away, I'll be there to fall into the dark to chase your heart. Distance could ever tear us apart. There's nothing that I wouldn't do. I'll find my way back to you.
Hi, this is Gideon Emery, and you're listening to Not Another Teen Wolf Podcast.